Welcome everyone to another episode of Streamed and Screened, an entertainment podcast about movies and TV from Lee Enterprises. I'm Terry Lipschitz, managing editor of the National Newsroom at Lee, and co-host of the program with Bruce Miller, editor of the Sioux City Journal and a longtime entertainment reporter. We're talking journalism this week, right? I mean, this is about us.
You know, the thing is, I have been waiting for The Paper, which is a comedy done by the people who did The Office. I've been waiting for this thing for the longest time because I'm dying to see how they attack the newspaper business, our business,
yeah.
Right? We love to watch ourselves. We love to talk about ourselves. We love to reward ourselves. But you're thinking, how does somebody from the outside view us? And I've been waiting for this and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. Finally, I got it. All 10 episodes I've already gone through. And I realize that they're not necessarily doing the newspaper that I know. They're doing a newspaper. So some of the things that we see as issues or things that might, you know, raise our interest are not necessarily part of theirs. And that's okay. That's fine. But if you were expecting Dunder Mifflin in your local newspaper, it's not. It's not.
Yeah.
The series revolves around the Toledo Truth Teller, which is owned by a larger corporation, and they're putting in a new editor. The new editor used to work in the corporation that owns the company. So he has a sense of what the corporation is all about, but he hasn't been in a newspaper since he was in college. So he's coming in and he realizes that this wasn't the beautiful dream he once had, where everybody is, you know, rushing to get a story and it's deadline pressure and they're, you know, stop the presses and all that stuff. No, it's not like that at all. In fact, he doesn't have much of a staff. He finds out he has really one reporter, somebody who designs the pages or pastes them up, and then he has a managing editor who really doesn't care that much about what's going on. So he's got to try and create a paper. I think it's more about creating a paper than it is looking in on a paper. And that's where it gets, it's just fun because he asks for volunteers. Now, have you ever had that at a newspaper where you say, who here would like to volunteer to be a reporter?
Well, I've sat in on enough meetings with the legal department to know that we can't do that. We need to actually pay people for their work. So, that's just like a weird premise to me to begin with. I get it for a comedic value type of thing, sure. But yeah, I don't understand why people would want to just volunteer to be journalists.
Well, and
like
it'd be like,
you know, like, do you want to volunteer to be an accountant? No.
Right. Well, but how do they get that work done and then go do journalism?
Right.
I don't see how that works. And then, you know, it's typical of most things that are about the business is that they all are working on one story.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can't all work on one story. We have to have more than one story to put in the paper. And so that, you know, you see the disconnects, but it's still fun to see quirky people who work at the paper.
Yeah.
Isn't that the way it always is? I think we are the quirky people at the paper, but, but you know, and then some of the things that you worry about, like the little things that become big problems, the vending machine doesn't work and this becomes a crisis, or nobody made the coffee in the morning. Those are things that we relate to, but, the journalism aspect of it, I think it's going to take a while for them to get to that point. There's a cute episode early on, so I'm not spoiling anything. This is not a spoiler, but a group of students from a local school come over to shadow the truth teller people. And they realize that the kids know more than they do about the business. So, yeah, it's cute. Donald Gleason, and you've seen him in some Star Wars films.
Oh, sure.
He's been in a lot. He was, in fact, he was the one who held Steve Carell hostage in that, I think it was a Hulu or an FX series where yeah, it didn't end well, but he was evil in that. But he's the editor coming in, and very naive in a lot of ways and fun, lots of fun.
Sure. Okay.
When you get to like the toward the end of the series, you will think, oh my God, I love him. He's great. He's a wonderful editor. But it does take a while. But then that got me thinking, okay, so then if this wasn't my favorite journalism show, what is? And television has hit and missed a lot of times. They've had a lot of journalism. Like, do you remember the one most recently where it was Not Dead Yet? It was about an obit writer.
I didn't see that one, no.
Well, she worked all week long on one obituary.
Oh, that's
do you know
not...
any place that has this happen? No.
No, I would actually have a problem with any reporter working on one story for an entire week, unless it's like a deep dive investigative type of thing.
And those, you better be really sure you want to do it.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
No, I mean, I came up as a sports reporter, and it was common for me to write three or four stories in a day, not one in a week.
Right, right. But and yes. You think you're lazy if you don't produce. And then,
correct.
You know, I've had reporters come in and say, now, what are our quotas? How many do we have to write? Because in my last paper, I had to write X number of stories a day.
Right.
And you think, wow, that's interesting. We don't have a quota, but we certainly keep track of, you know, who's producing and who's not.
Yeah, it's easy to, I mean, obviously, every story is different. And one story that's a little bit more in depth might be the same as somebody putting in the time of three shorter stories that can be a little bit, you know, what you consider more of a quick turn type of thing. So you don't always want to put a quota on things. You just as an editor, you kind of know what's in the ballpark of like productive.
You know, we had a sports editor here who was always laughing on the nights of elections.
Oh, yeah.
Because he said, you guys, you get so excited and you're doing all this stuff on one night. We have an election every night in sports.
Yep. Yeah.
And, you know, it really is. It's you've got to get it done by a certain time. You've got to get it turned around. I think the biggest change, and they do notice this in this series, is that because we all have earlier deadlines, some of that later stuff doesn't get in print the next day.
Right.
So those things are becoming an online. We've got to get that online right away. And it's still the same process, but it's a different method of sharing the information. So, you see what happens with all that.
Yeah, and it's funny you bring up the sports connection, though, too, because I remember one of the sports departments, I don't know if I worked for it or if I just knew someone who worked in one of these departments, they had a sign up in their sports department that says, like, every night is election night in sports. Where's our pizza? Because the big thing in journalism is on election night, we're buying pizza for the staff because it's busy. We got all this work to do. And they're like, you know, we should be getting pizza every night because it's election night every night. But I've been on both ends of it now. They're two different beasts. Yes, sports is very busy. But there's also times in sports which is very, very dead. It's called the summer when nothing happens. So there's like, trust me, you know, for as like busy as it can be during high school football or college football season, there's a lot of like quiet weeks in sports departments in June and July and into August.
Yeah, it's you know, I don't think you could do a journalism story, series, movie, whatever, that would make people who are in the business feel like, oh my God, they captured it, unless you were doing their story. And even then they have to, you know, it's boring work for a lot of times because you're researching, you're interviewing, you're trying to group things, you're trying to write, you know, that doesn't translate well. So that's why they have to lean into one story or one kind of issue that people all go at. So it's a little more welcoming, if that's the term I want to use. Do you remember Lou Grant? Did you ever watch Lou Grant?
I watched bits and pieces of the Mary Tyler Moore Show. I probably caught a little Lou Grant at some point, but it was a little before my time.
Okay. Well, Lou Grant, I mean, that was a great transition going from a comedy to a drama.
Right.
And they took one character and then they surrounded him with really good people. So you got a chance to see the reporter at work, the photographer at work, the publisher who was very demanding on the editor. I mean, I thought that captured the experience a little better than some of these other ones do.
Yeah. There's some.
We've had big movies too that mess.
Yeah.
With it.
There's two shows that I wanted to bring up in this that I thought did a fairly good job at capturing journalism. One was a Netflix series a couple of years ago. What was it called? Becoming Anna.
Okay.
Or Inventing Anna. Do you remember that one? It was on Netflix. It was about Anna Delvey, but it was based on the reporting in New York Magazine. And I thought that was I've never really worked in magazines, so it's a little bit of a different pace, but I thought it did a fairly good job at capturing journalism, and it was an entertaining show. The other one that I really liked, and I was very disappointed when it got canceled after season one, was Alaska Daily with
Hillary Swank. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, was it the best TV show, best drama ever? No. I thought it was a very serviceable drama, but I thought from a journalism perspective, it actually captured the modern newsroom really well.
Right.
Because it got into things like, you know, we don't have enough reporters. Our deadlines are all out of whack. We're watching the metrics of stories on the big board. It really captured, I think, small community journalism and some of the struggles. Like I get what this new comedy is trying to do, but I think if you really want to capture or get a sense for what is going on in a modern newsroom, Alaska Daily did a really good job at capturing that. And the funny thing about this, and I think I mentioned to you this previously, is I actually knew several people that worked for I guess it was the Anchorage Daily News, or one of those papers that is loosely connected to it in real life. I was in, there's a organization, it's called the Poynter Institute. It's based in Florida. It's kind of a workshopping,
sure,
educational, for those that don't know, for journalists. So you go down to the Poynter Institute, you might take some classes, you might be involved in a program. And I was in a year-long program where, you know, we all went down to Tampa, we met, we started our project for a year, and then a year later, we met back down there. And when we started, in our group was the publisher, the editor, and a few reporters from the paper in Anchorage. And it was kind of like the editor there was the editor that was loosely based on this TV show. It was really fascinating, and their owner was their owner of their paper was married to David Rubenstein at the time, or had just been divorced from David, right?
Sure.
And she used the money from like the divorce, or I don't remember exactly what the story was, but she was very well off because of her marriage to David Rubenstein, and bought the paper with really good intentions. But by the time we met a year later, she had already sold off the paper. And that really, like, again, you know, when you look at what some of the topics that were covered in Alaska Daily and the struggles and the publisher and ownership changes, a lot of these things were addressed. And I thought that show did a really good job and was a solid effort in capturing real life modern journalism.
Well, I liked when they'd go to somebody's house to interview them, and then they shut the door on them and they go, no, I don't want to talk. And that you do find all the time is that you're met with resistance. Today, what we see even more is that people think we have an agenda, that we're coming into this to promote this or that or whatever. And that's not the way real journalism operates.
Correct.
You know?
Right.
So it's when they get things right, it's great to celebrate it. But I don't think you're with this show. I don't think let's all lean in on this because I don't think it is that. And you get to see a character from The Office in there who is part of their process. So that's kind of fun. But enjoy it for what it is. It's not all newspapers. It's the paper.
Okay. Yeah. So
now
movies.
But then there are movies too that have done it. And I think movies have done it better. You know?
I would agree.
Spotlight won Best Picture and
probably the best journalism film. Well, I think you can argue a few different films here, but I think Spotlight, there's two that I think are kind of like the gold standard of journalism movies. One would be Spotlight, and then of course the other being All the President's Men.
And you know, when was the last time you watched All the President's Men?
It's been a few years. It's one of those films. I read the book and I've probably seen the movie a dozen times over the years. It's one of those that I'll pop in, you know, you kind of like feeling like, why am I still doing this kind of thing? And then you watch All the President's Men, and you're like, that's why I'm doing this, right?
Yeah.
it does inspire you. Yeah.
It's inspirational. I think it's slower than you may remember because I've seen it in recent times and I think, oh God, this is really dragging, isn't it? But at the time it seemed so immediate and everything was happening. I remember going to the Watergate Hotel, staying at the Watergate Hotel and thinking, oh, do you suppose where was this room? I got to find, you know, I was like, that's how nutty I was about All the President's Men. But I think they did a great job. I think they, at the time, captured what journalism was about. And when they were taking real garbage from the Washington Post and using it for set decorating, you know, okay, you're really trying as hard as you can to make this work. It's fun to watch it now, though, where Dustin Hoffman is typing his story and like the other one's looking over his shoulder and you're going, typing, what is this? And somebody else is giving you other words and we're going to just erase them and do what are we doing with this? You know, so it's very old school. But Spotlight is more within our realm. And I think that does show when you do a big project, how it takes legwork. You're not just going to have it show up on your desk and something, you just run it.
Right.
You've got to dig. Right. And the odd thing was, is that the information they were looking for was right where they are. You know, it didn't take a huge search. But now if you think back, if we're talking, you know, journalism movies, Citizen Kane was a journalism movie.
Yeah.
He was, you know, it's not a world we know.
Right.
But that was interesting. His Girl Friday was another one that got people excited about journalism because, you know, the fast talking, come on, give me a rewrite and all that kind of stuff. I wish that were the case. I have never seen that, but I think all of them lose sight of the fact that there are great friendships that are formed among people who probably wouldn't be friends with each other in other circumstances. Terry, just you and me talking, how would I have known you? And journalism brought us together. And that's, I think that's the cool thing about this is you get to meet other people. And that's what I think the joy is of doing journalism is you get to meet other people, hear other voices, hear what their feelings are, what their thoughts are about things. Mm-hmm. And it's like a constant learning process for us.
Yeah, it's really interesting the people you come in contact with, the people that you meet. You know, I worked with a guy for a while who is doing tours of the Jersey Shore, showing the old stops of Bruce Springsteen, you know. I worked with another guy who, he was a sports editor of a paper, a small paper. He's now the editor-in-chief of NHL.com. I worked with another guy who's a very well-known music critic now. And he's been on a lot of these big documentaries that have been on he was on the Billy Joel one recently. It's just like fascinating some of the people. And I was even thinking about like some of the people who I've met over the years. Like I met Jon Bon Jovi. I've met a lot of notable sports figures. I was in an interview situation with Derek Jeter. I met two Wisconsin governors. I met the former Speaker of the House. You come across a lot of interesting people just from doing this job. And it's really like your perceptions of people You know, forgetting about, like, you know, are you a Democrat or a Republican or this, that, or the other? Some of the people who you who may not have your same political beliefs, you'll meet them in real life and you're like, this is a normal person. I could right. hang out and have beers with this person. And then you meet somebody who's maybe a little bit more aligned with you on politics. And you're like, I can't get out of the room fast enough with this person. It's really interesting. The personalities.
When we were having the caucuses, we got to see all of them in their early days of, you know, campaigning, because right. Iowa would be a state where they would test the waters. And yeah. you'd see these ones, and some really had no clue about the people that they were talking to. I mean, they were playing a game, and they were playing a role. They were propped up by people who told them, this is what you've got to do, or this is what you've got to say. And I remember, I've interviewed every president back to Jimmy Carter. So you can see where, you know, that's, I think, a real cool thing in my life. But yeah. getting the candidates, you get a lot of them. And you have the ones that are very kind of shy, and you think they're running for president and they're shy. Mm-hmm. I can't believe this. You should be, you know, eager to talk to people. Or ones right. that are on the phone in the front of your office building, dealing with some kind of personal scandal. And that we right. had, and that was interesting to see. But the one who impressed me the most now, and this has nothing to do with politics, you know, because I really thought that Hillary Clinton was an interesting campaign person, because mm-hmm. she didn't just go to the editorial board and talk to the editorial board people, which is normally what we have them do. They come into the right. office, they talk with the editorial board, and you get a chance to kind of feel them out and see what they're like. She went to everybody in the office, and she shook hands with everybody, and she was just really fun, I thought. And I didn't think any of that came through when she was campaigning. I thought she was very stiff in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
But as a person just dealing with people, she was like somebody I could work with. I think I could have fun with her. And wow. those are the things we get the option of seeing.
Right.
And, you know, it's strange when we have dead people, celebrities, people will come to me and say, did you ever interview this person? And chances are good that I have interviewed everybody at some point.
Right.
And what you remember is the thing that you remember from that day. You know, this person was a real jerk and they were doing this. And so right. that's what comes into your mind, not anything else that's colored at since or before. So journalism gets you a window onto a world that's like no other. And it's right. it's a great way to tell a story, because we deal with stories all the time. We have to produce stories. So we know the beginning, the middle, and the end. We know that this has to have some kind of structure. And I think that's why the movies like that, is because there's structure to the film.
Right.
Does that make sense? I hope so.
Yeah, I agree.
But there have been really stupid films. Now, most recently this year, we had Superman. And Superman goes into their kind of futuristic newsroom. And I thought, God, they have a lot of TV screens in their newsroom. Aren't they not working? Are they all looking at the screens? You know?
Yeah.
Right. So that's how that goes. But, you know, other films. And if we go into other kinds of journalism, broadcast, for example, Network is my all-time favorite movie. And I love the idea that it seems so bizarre, and yet it's become so true.
Right.
Even though in 76, I think it was, this seemed like a fantasy that they're, and they just followed the game plan. That's all.
Yeah.
But
there's been some really depressing ones too, you know, like The Killing Fields.
Yes. Yes.
Salvador. I mean, you know, these really can get into, it's not, journalism can be a very difficult career. I mean, it's, you know, if you're, it's one thing to be a domestic reporter, but if you're going into a war situation, it's survival for folks. you know, you look at on the flip of it, then you look at the paper, which has nothing to do with the new TV show.
Right.
But it was a comedy that was based, you know, in New York in kind of like a tabloid newsroom. It's one of my favorite movies. It took some liberties, I think, with the profession. But I thought it was very well done, and it was a fun watch for me. I don't know. Do you like that one?
Yeah, I did.
Michael
Keaton. The Post is another one that I liked. Another look at the Washington Post and their experiences. Yep. But they get pieces of it right. I don't think we can hold them to the fire and say, you've got to get it all right, because that's not how it is, you know?
Right.
The other thing I find that people don't realize is that oftentimes we don't become friendly with people outside of the office because we want to keep that distance if we're covering them. You know what I mean? We would be very likely to be friends with politicians because we're opinionated, they're opinionated, we have ideas, we want to share ideas, but you find yourself pulling away from that because you say, now this, somebody could think that I'm, you know, being curried to be giving them good publicity or whatever, you know, and so they don't realize that today, people just think we're in the bag for anybody, and that's not it.
Right.
So as a result, our friendships often exist in the newsroom.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting just even having to, you know, from an ethics standpoint, having to be careful with what we do because we have the perception. I know our elected county prosecutor, her daughter, I coached in basketball. She goes to middle school and now high school with my daughters. So I know our county prosecutor very well. And I was out, you know, watching a sporting event one day and she's handing out a petition to get back on the ballot for the last election. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I was like, I respectfully cannot sign it. I wish you luck in your quest for office. She ended up running unopposed. So, you know, as it was, it really didn't matter anyway. But it's those are the little awkward situations that come up. I mean, I even remember being out with my family. For those that aren't aware, Wisconsin had a very contentious situation 12, 14 years ago, where the governor, Scott Walker at the time, was, you know, putting into place with Republicans and anti-union, you know, with teachers and stuff, policies. They were trying to cut back on collective bargaining. My wife is a teacher. My parents and my wife signed petitions to recall the governor. And I'm like, you do what you want to do. I can't sign that. You know, that's not something that I can't get politically active. I mean, we can't put lawn signs on during an election.
I put a sign in your lawn? And you go, no, you cannot. Can I give you a button to wear or a sticker to wear? No, you cannot.
No, you cannot.
Sometimes people don't get that. They don't understand that we're trying to maintain this distance. And, you know, what we tell reporters too, if you're not covering that area of things, you can be friendly with those people. There's no problem with that. But be careful if you are reporting about people that you somehow see socially, because it could end up being compromising.
Correct. Yeah.
So
and it's interesting too. Just even from like I'm working sports now again for our company. And one thing that I have issue with, and I know certain news organizations have things in place about this, but not all do, is reporters voting for things. So, for instance, you'll have reporters who are members of the Baseball Writers Association of America. They vote for who should be into the Hall of Fame, right? They vote for, some of them vote for awards like Most Valuable Player or the Cy Young Award. Some media organizations allow their sports reporters to vote for those things. Some, I know, I'm pretty sure the New York Times does not allow their reporters to vote in these. I read a story the other day, so I know for a fact that the Los Angeles Times does not allow their reporters. But the reasoning there is thinking like, well, if you're voting for the Heisman Trophy, if you're voting for somebody to be in the Baseball Hall of Fame, you are part of creating the story. But journalists, as a journalist, you're supposed to be an observer. You're supposed to be taking note. You're supposed to be reporting on it. So there is an interesting...
But wouldn't a reporter be more knowledgeable about somebody
that's
who
kind
would deserve
of,
that?
So that, right. So that's kind of the, you know, you can argue it in both directions. Me personally, if I was the sports editor of a newsroom, I would not allow my reporters to vote for any of those things. So, you know, you take like the argument of, let's say the Hall of Fame, you could create a committee of retired sports reporters of other people. You can make committees, you can find people who can vote for these things who would be more objective than a journalist would be. And I understand, like, you know, the beat reporters, they're covering these things. You know, they follow the teams, they are experts. And I'm not doubting that they're not experts because they are the experts. But I would just go back to my early days of being a reporter and being in an awkward situation where I was asked to come up with, you know, an all area team for a high school. And, you know, you pick one kid over another, and I can tell you, coach of their kid that doesn't get picked isn't happy, and they will yell at you on the phone for a very long time. So it's like creating the news, being a reporter that creates and interjects themselves in the news. It can be complicated.
Well, and sometimes you have those columnists who are designed to stir the pot, but they're not covering.
And that's a little bit different, right?
Yeah. They're not covering the day-to-day stuff, so they don't see those people. So you can easily say, oh, well, I cover the stories only. I do not write his column. And then I think when you separate church and state like that, it makes it a lot easier for everybody.
Right.
They can get mad at him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, if we want to make a list of the best football players in the area, well, we're going to have that content first. So we would run the story, and then we'll deal with the fallout after that. But
it is it's a tricky thing, and I don't know if there's actually a right answer for that. It's just, you know, it's like a personal opinion. I've been on both. Like years ago, if you asked 25-year-old Terry about whether or not a reporter should vote for the Heisman Trophy or Baseball Writers,
he'd say yes.
Yes, having moved from sports into news, and now kind of like I bridged the line now because I handle both news and sports in my current job, I have a different perspective, and you know, and I don't think it's a right answer or a wrong answer. It's just that's my current opinion, and if I'm ever in charge of a newsroom and have to make that decision, I will. But you know, we're not there.
Well, it's like politics, where if you're that vocal about some issue or whatever, maybe you should get out of journalism and go into politics. That could be your answer for that.
Yeah. Go work for the Democratic Party. Go work for the Republican Party. Yeah. Go work for a third party, whatever. If that's your passion, it's probably time to leave journalism and move on to other things.
Right. There's a place for everybody, and they all could use good people. So, it's interesting. What I find, I'm going back to the paper now.
Yes.
That they think that people can just volunteer to do this job. It is not a volunteer job at all. You really need training, because everybody, I think, is so savvy these days about the media that they know better and they know what they're doing. And you need to have some kind of grounding that helps you through that kind of that landmine of things that are going on. So,
yeah.
Say what it is, but there we are.
All right. Well, on that note,
but
we
watch
will
it.
Move into
Terry,
other
I want you
territory.
To watch it. Yeah, I want you to watch the paper and let me know what you think. But I'm getting you set up for the idea that it's not a look at all newspapers.
Correct.
In fact, this one is probably very unique. And I've never seen a managing editor who really doesn't do anything. But that she is more interested in her own, how she comes off than how the paper comes off. Maybe I've seen that too. But so it's fun. There are a fun bunch of characters that are pulled together. And I think it really lights up when those high school kids come to the paper.
I will look it out, and I will check it out soon. So, but no, it was a good discussion. It's always fun to talk our profession. And thank you all for listening. And we'll be back again next week with another episode of Streamed and Screened.